2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen. The sky's so blue, the birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, 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 hey. It's a sunny day. Sunny day now. My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, 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 hey. It's just a sunny day. Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
KSL Greenhouse. Information and great talk about your home, garden, and your lawn. If you love perennials, can't get enough help on landscape design, or just want to keep your lawn and vegetable garden pest-free, grab a pen. It's the KSL Greenhouse on KSL News Radio.
Welcome back to the KSL Greenhouse. I'm Ethan Millard. I've got Ton Bettis here. I'm filling in for Maria Chaleos. And Ton, I've had such a fun time doing this show the last 2 weeks. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for having me on here and walking me through this process. I've just learned a ton.
It's been great. You know, when the Nightside was on the air every night, I know you've switched over to podcast. I listen faithfully, you know, I was driving in the evenings,
yeah.
And you and Alex doing that show, I always listen and just love the show. And so it's a pleasure having you do the Greenhouse show, because it brings just a little bit of that vibe over to the Greenhouse show. So
well, I appreciate that. And those were some great years. So, well, we've got a few callers on the line. We're definitely going to get to. And as we move over to the callers, I wanted to bring up something else that we just wanted to cover, because And this is something that hits gardeners every year, and that is blossom end rot.
It does. I was on Facebook yesterday. USU has a gardening page that people can ask gardening questions, kind of like they do on our Facebook Messenger, on the Greenhouse Show, and other places. And somebody was asking the group, how do I put eggshells in my garden to prevent blossom end rot? Because in many parts of the country, blossom end rot is caused by a lack of calcium in the soil, but it's not true in Utah. Our soils are up to 1/3 calcium carbonate, and here it's caused by temperature fluctuations, where we jump from 70 to 90 to 70 to 100 this year. And then it is also caused by sporadic watering, to where the tomatoes dry out, get really wet, dry out, get really wet. And so if we can evenly water in our gardens and then just let Mother Nature do her thing by late summer, a lot of times that blossom end rot is gone. And, you know, it's not only on tomatoes, but it also gets peppers and squash and many other things. And it's just the temperature fluctuations and the soil water fluctuations cause problems with calcium uptake from the roots that cause the problem.
Mm, okay. All right. Well, I mean, that's good to know. And as so often is the case, Ton, it's little things like the watering schedule that sometimes go the farthest with these. And I know from personal experience, you see something missing, you see something wrong in the garden, and you're instantly assuming that there's going to have to be some product, some major change, some major thing that's going to have to be done to correct it. But that's not necessarily the case.
No, it's not. 70 or 80% of the time people call either my office or the show or somehow ask questions about plant problems. There's a solution that doesn't involve chemicals, and it's usually watering issues, especially for brand new plants or plants in their first year of life.
Yeah. Well, let's jump on a couple of calls here. I think that's a good segue. Let's go to Seth in Roy. And Seth, you're having some problems with the ground cover that you put down.
Yes, we several years ago saw some really nice ground cover growing between flagstones in the Ogden River Parkway gardens, and we thought we would reproduce that idea. So we have the rock patio with flagstones and low-growing ground covers between. and they did pretty well for a few years. And this year, the grass seems to have infested, almost taken over. And the grass, it's hard to get out. The roots are intertwined with the roots of the ground cover. Is there a better solution than pulling out the grass, which pulls out a lot of the ground cover? And even more important, I suppose, is there a way to prevent the grass from coming up through that ground cover?
Well, the area you're talking, I'm assuming it's Kentucky bluegrass coming up through your ground cover.
It probably is. That's what I have in the rest of the lawn, and that's probably what it is.
Because normally you could use something like Ornamac, which is a grass killer, but it doesn't do a very good job against Kentucky bluegrass. And so in your situation, what you probably would need to do is get all that grass cleaned out and then try to save as much of the ground cover as you can. But where the rocks are and that where they meet the grass, you would need to maintain bare soil. So once you got the grass cleaned out of the ground cover all the way, new grass doesn't creep back in.
Have you tried anything like this, Seth?
I don't think I understood what you said I should
be
doing.
Well, if you have Kentucky bluegrass in your ground cover, I'm assuming that those rocks meet your lawn and the grass grows right up to the rocks. Am I incorrect?
No, the rock patio is separated from the lawn by some boulders. So it's really not adjacent to the lawn.
Okay, the Kentucky bluegrass roots can go several feet. I was digging up some flower beds a couple of weeks ago, and I was finding roots coming off Kentucky bluegrass about 3 feet away from where the Kentucky bluegrass stopped. So it can be quite aggressive. So, I mean, there are possibilities there. I mean, you could try using something like Ornamac to see if it would kill the grass out, especially if it's not Kentucky bluegrass. But short of killing it out and starting over, if you can't get rid of the grass, you know, it's just really difficult because, like you said, you try to pull it and you pull your ground cover out. And so you almost need a 100% dead solution, you know, as far as getting rid of that grass, if the Ornamac doesn't work.
Basically kill it out with Roundup start over.
Mm-hmm. And make sure, even where you've got those boulders, you might want to have a 2 or 3 inch area around them that's bare soil. So, you know, it would involve maybe using some Roundup to kill the lawn around them or digging the grass out once a month, going out there with a spade and just putting a shovel down 6 or 8 inches into the soil so that that grass doesn't grow back in, if that's where it came from.
That's interesting. How far would you need to cut down in to cut those grass roots?
Well, the Kentucky bluegrass usually doesn't root deeper than about a foot, but even on the edge of your grass, if you have a spade 6 inches deep and you just kind of go along the edge and just shove it into the soil, you know, just with your feet, that generally does the job.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Seth, I hope this is helpful to you.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for calling in. That opens up a line, 801-KSL-TALK. That's 801-575-8255, 801-575-8255. We've got to grab a quick break. When we come back, we're going to hit Sherry in Vineyard. Got a question about her tomatoes. So we got the first tomato question of the day that's coming up.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back. You're in the KSL Greenhouse. We've got some great topics to tee up here. We've got a couple of callers calling in at 801-KSL-TALK. That's 575-8255. Tana, I also want to get to a couple of questions on Facebook and on the Utah Community Credit Union KSL text line at 57500. Let's get started, though, with Sherry in Vineyard. Sherry, I want to congratulate you. You are bringing our first tomato question of the day. So well done.
Thank you. And thank you for taking my call. I was wondering, I've watched some YouTube, and on there it's talking about putting Epsom salts around tomato plants and also coffee grounds. Mm.
That's the latest and Pinterest, Facebook thing hitting. It's been Dawn dish soap and now this one. In Utah, you don't need to. The coffee grounds have some nitrogen in there, but you're just putting salt around your tomatoes, and our soils 90% of the time have plenty of nutrients for the tomatoes, and the Epsom salts are not going to be beneficial.
Are you worried for your tomatoes, Sherry?
No, but I did have to say that, well, it's kind of sandy out here in some spots, and some spots it's kind of clay. And so I thought, well, you know, so I took a chunk of Epsom salt, just a small chunk, about a tablespoon size, and just kind of stuck it in the ground beside one of my tomatoes, and it turned really green. And I thought, I wonder if that's what it's supposed to do, if it's good for it, not, or what.
Epsom salts are magnesium sulfate, and so it could indicate that you have a sulfur deficiency in your soil, especially if it's old alfalfa fields. And so I'm torn because all fertilizers are salts, but in sandy soil, you can sometimes get nitrogen or phosphorus, potassium, and even sulfur deficiencies. And so I'd almost rather see you use like a triple 16. But if you, in this one situation with your sandy soil, if you wanted to use a little bit of Epsom salts, if you did see a green up, you could do that because you know that you have a deficiency. But for the general homeowner, because 80% of us have more of a loamy to a clay textured soil, Epsom salts are not going to be beneficial.
How do you know when you've laid down too much salt?
The plants will not grow. Mm. They turn yellow, they're distorted, and not really distorted, but stunted. And then in the worst situations, they just die. What happens when there's too much salt is that the salt, because it can't penetrate into the roots, Mother Nature trying to keep all things equal, you actually have water pass out of the roots into the soil trying to balance that salt, and that's why it stunts your plants. So in your situation with your sandy soil, this is going to be one of the few times I'm going to say go ahead, but go ahead.
Okay.
Okay. And can I just say one other thing? Today is mine and my husband's 39th wedding anniversary, and I wanted to say happy anniversary to Bill.
Oh, well done, you guys. Congratulations to you. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks so much for calling in, Sherry. We really appreciate it. I want to hit you with a text question here.
Okay.
This person texted into to 57500. What's an eco-friendly way to rid your tree of aphids?
The most eco-friendly way is just a strong spray of water if the tree isn't too tall. And you don't want it so strong that you're blowing the leaves off the tree.
Okay.
But you want it strong enough that knocking those aphids out of the tree, they're not mobile really, and it's going to be really hard for them to climb back up. Now, you're not going to knock all of them out, but if you do that in the morning, you know, 3 or 4 times a week, that will give time for ladybugs and lacewings and other predators to catch up to try to control the actual aphids in there.
Yeah.
The next most eco-friendly thing would be something like horticultural soap. and that would use according to label. And it's not that it's super friendly to insect predators, but many more insect predators make it through to replenish the supply of them, so to speak, than if you use a really harsh chemical like Malmithion or 7.
Right, right. Okay. All right. Well, hopefully, Texture, that answers your question pretty well. Let's go to Rod and Harriman with our second tomato question of the day. Rod, welcome to the KSL Greenhouse.
Hi. I have some tomatoes that I planted about 6 weeks ago, and they're celebrity tomatoes and maybe one other variety. And I planted 12 of them, and six of them look like they have curly leaf. The leaf is all curling up. I'm wondering, is that going to be something I can control, or I just have to throw them away and start over?
Well, let's see first. Now, when you start seeing these curling leaves, are you seeing that they're turning light yellow and curling?
No,
or
they're not
are
turning.
They just dark green and healthy but just curled up?
They're dark green and healthy but just curled up.
Okay. Well, there's a condition in tomatoes called physiological leaf roll, where the leaves roll up almost like a little miniature cigar. And it's when we get hot weather, we don't know for sure, but we think it's a drought response or a heat response. And that rolling may help somehow lessen water loss or something. But many varieties of tomatoes, it's really common, and it doesn't impact your overall production. So now if it's curly top, which is a viral disease spread mainly by beet leaf hopper, what will happen is you'll start to see it show up this time of year, and the tops, especially the outermost leaves, will start to turn yellow, and then they get a little bit distorted, and it stunts the plants, and over a period of a couple of months, the plants just die.
Okay. All right. Could I ask you one other question about what you just got through talking about the aphids?
Sure. Go ahead.
I had some aphids in my tree, and I sprayed them with an insecticide, but the leaf is all curled up really tight, so it's hard to get the spray in on the insect. So what you're saying is the best way is to just spray that leaf with a good stream of water?
What you're going to be doing on the newer growth is where you're really going to be helping the tree. Those leaves that are already all puckered up like that are not going to unfurl. That's permanent, but what you will see if you've taken care of the problem is the new growth will come out normal.
Okay. All right. Well,
okay.
I hope that's helpful for you, Rod. Thanks so much for calling in. And you can get on the line with us, 801-KSL-TALK. That's 575-8255. Tom, we've got just 1 minute left, so I want to hit you really quickly with this question from Facebook. This person called in. They said that 2 years ago, the lawn started getting patches of dead grass, one of them over the septic tank. That's where it started, but it's spread out a little bit to a couple of the places in the lawn. Anything off the top of your head that
The pictures, and they are a little strange. They don't look like the classic signs of insect damage. If it's directly over the septic tank, that oftentimes is septic tank is leaching water that's salty. And as we get hot, you get a lot more water evaporation and it causes salts to rise. Mm. So that's one thing to be aware of. But to where it's farther away from the septic tank and the pattern of damage, I actually recommended that they have the soil tested for saltiness from USU Soil Lab, but then also sending samples of the grass up to the Utah State University Extension Pest Lab to let them get the grass under a scope and to see if they can find any signs of a fungal disease or something else going on.
Yeah. A little bit of detective work is warranted, it sounds like, for that person on Facebook. All right. Thanks so much for that comment and for these calls. We've taken more of your calls at 801-KSL-TALK when we come back.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.